Chapter 4. Atlas's main temple chamber was filled with tech adepts, attending to the damage control circuits and mechanisms that commanded and monitored the barge city's defences, energy grid, and a dozen other vital systems. Agapito had escorted Loriac and the other magi of Third District to Korax a few minutes earlier, along with an entourage from other precincts. These were swiftly led back out again as they bombarded the Primarch with questions and demands. Now only Loriac, Firax, and Agapito remained, and between them sat the former Magocritarch Vangelin, hunched in a chair with his natural hand held across a dented metal chestplate. He glowered at Korax.
"Your victory will be short-lived."
Exposed by his ripped robe, his sallow skin was covered with spots of thick, drying blood.
"Do you think I freely gave in to Delvia's demands? He wields a power greater even than a Primarch."
"The power of the Omnisire," said Agapito, standing beside his lord. "Your machine god will save him from vengeance?"
"The power of the warp."
What little could be seen of Vangelin's cracked lips, twisted in a sneer.
"The warp, unchained."
"You have seen this for yourself," grated Loriac. "What manner of creations is the Archmagos forging on Iapetus?"
"What did you learn from the memory stores of your companion?" Korax asked, ignoring the Magocritarch's posturing. "Did he know what Delvia is planning?"
"Nothing more than we could have guessed," replied Loriac with a shake of the head. "Delvia is long studied in the mechanics and arts of the warp, and with the aid of the word-bearer Navrakin, is creating new engines to harness its power."
"Not only to harness it, but bring it to life, to give it divine mechanical form," snapped Vangelin. "The warp sustained. Yes, that is what he has achieved. The synthesis of material and immaterial. The symbiosis of the physical and the incorporeal. Even as he threatened me with its power, he showed me the heights of greatness to which Constanix can now aspire. We will rival Anvilus, Griffon, perhaps even Mars itself when our power is revealed."
"More powerful than the sacred red planet?"
Even with his labored words, Firax's incredulity was plain to hear.
"If you believe such lies, then you are a fool. It is right that we resisted your delusions."
Korax turned away from the others and stared out of the shattered remains of the window. Dawn was spreading across Atlas, now strangely peaceful in the pinkish light. Vangelin had been true to his word of surrender, formally handing power to Loriac in exchange for his life. The fighting had lasted only a few minutes more, as word had spread that order had been restored, the speed of the command network as swift to restore peace as it had been to break it. Loriac had sent a brief statement to the Outer Districts, explaining that Vangelin had been accused of techno-heresies and would face judgment by his fellow magi in due course. Freed from the threats of Vangelin, the other district temples had been swift to acknowledge Loriarch's claim, backed as it was by more Raven Guard arriving from orbit in the dawn hours. Squads of soldiers and battle engines had been withdrawn to be replaced by teams of labourers and repair equipment. Cranes and gravlifters, cyber-articulated work crews, and myriad other men and machines were clearing the rubble, shoring up damaged buildings, and dousing the flames left by just 3 hours of close fighting. "If Delvia's studies into the warp are so advanced, how can a legionary of the word-bearers help him?" Agapito asked. Korax glanced over his shoulder to see the commander standing over Vangelin, arms folded across his chest. "What could this Navrakin know of the warp that the Archmagos doesn't?"
"The wrong sort of knowledge," said Korax before Vangelin could answer. "You remember the word-bearers at Cruciax, or those poor creatures on the Cameo? The hideous beasts that came at us on Istvan V.
Agapito's grimace showed clearly that he remembered the mutated warriors who had followed Lorgar during the drop site massacre. Korax knew that there had been whispers and rumours ever since of mysterious powers at play. He had been too focused on rebuilding the Legion and then striking back at Horus to quell the chattering, but now it was time to make certain truths known. Truths that had been revealed to him directly by the Emperor, truths that even now were hinted at in the recesses of his mind, where the last memories the Emperor had passed to Korax still dwelt, like shadows at the bottom of a gorge. He trusted Agapito, and had done so since they had first stood together so many decades ago. Though hot-headed of late, he needed to know the nature of the foes they were now facing. All of the Raven Guard deserved that, after suffering so much at their hands.
"There are creatures that live within the warp," said Korax.
Agapito nodded in understanding, and was about to reply, but the Primarch cut him off.
"Things not just in the warp, but of the warp. The creatures that consume a ship if its Geller fields fail. The creatures that the navigators call the Empyrean predators, and the Emperor calls demons."
Agapito muttered with distaste, while a cruel laugh erupted from Vangelin. The other tech priests listened with interest, seemingly detached from concern.
"Yes, demons," said Korax. "Beings not of flesh, but of the stuff of the warp itself."
"But what has that got to do with the word-bearers?" asked Agapito.
"I saw the power in them, and I saw it written in the eyes of Lorgar as I confronted him. There is another name for the warp, which the Emperor knew, and I now remember. Chaos."
There was a flicker of recognition in the eyes of Agapito as he heard the word that had been whispered among the ranks, but never spoken outright. Korax continued,
"The demons of chaos cannot exist in our world without a conduit. They are made up of the warp, and so reality leeches their power. The word-bearers we have fought, the twisted warriors that we faced, made themselves such conduits. They gave up a portion of their flesh, parts of their minds, so that these creatures could reside within them."
Agapito turned on Vangelin and seized him by the throat, dragging him from the chair.
"Delvey and Avrakin are infecting the people of Iapetus with this demon curse," he growled. "You knew of this and allied with them?"
"Nothing so crude," whispered Vangelin. "Flesh is temporal, impermanent. Machine is immortal, fitting for the hosts of the Great Ones."
"Let him go,"
Korax said quietly. Agapito obeyed without comment, dropping the deposed Mago Critarch back into his seat. The Primarch looked at Loriarch and Firax.
"Is it possible? Could chaos become manifest in a creation of wire and circuit, adamantium and plasteel?"
"If it is possible, Delvere will find a way," said Loriarch. "At the smallest level, flesh is nothing more than a mechanism too, composed of electrical impulses and exchanges of information. Life is simply a biological machine."
Korax took a deep breath and pursed his lips. He had thought that perhaps the word-bearers had been coming in desperation to Constanix II, seeking repairs or fresh arms and armor. The reality was far more grave and made the Primarch all the more glad that he had followed his instinct to come to the Forge World. Constanix II had not been chosen by Nadrakin because it was rich in resources, but for the opposite reason. It was inconsequential, out of sight, and out of mind. What better place to conduct experiments of the nature being discussed?
"Whatever advancements our enemies have made, they must be stopped," he told the others. "Not only must we destroy any machines they have created, the knowledge of their creation cannot leave this world."
"And the word-bearers?" Agapito asked the question casually, but Korax could feel the anger concealed beneath the commander's calm.
"They will be dealt with in due course," the Primarch replied carefully. "The mission is to rid Constanix of their corrupting influence. To thwart their plans will be punishment enough. There is no time for vendetta. Victory is vengeance."
Agapito did not reply, and it was plain that the Primarch's words were not to his liking.
"There is far more at stake than simply revenge against the traitors that tried to exterminate us,"
Korax said solemnly, trying to make Agapito understand.
"It was such errors of judgment, the desire to put personal need and gain above duty and service, which has led to so many following the War Master into treachery. It is the ambitions of the weak that the demons of chaos seek to exploit. Even here, their temptations have lured the Archmagos down a corrupt path, twisting his pursuit of knowledge into something far darker."
It was not clear whether the commander understood fully the threat that Horus's alliance had unleashed, but he nodded in compliance and stepped towards the door.
"I have to see to the marshalling of the Talons arriving from the Camuel," Agapito said. "If you will excuse me, Lord Primarch.
One moment more, Commander. Loriak, how soon do you think Delvia will learn of what has happened here?
A brief examination of the transmission logs shows that communication with the capital was sparse during the battle, the Magos replied. Delvia knows that there has been an uprising and will deduce from the lack of contact that it was successful. There is nothing to indicate that your presence is known.
Good, said Korax, looking back to Agapito. Ensure that every weapon system on Atlas is operational. Coordinate with the Magi and Skitari force commanders to create assault companies. I will review the preparations in 2 hours.
Assault companies?
Wheezed Firax.
Surely we must see to the defense of Atlas first. The highest probability is that Delvia's response will be a counterattack.
We will not be giving him the opportunity. We have the initiative, and we will keep it. Magor Kritak Loriak, set Atlas on a course for the capital. We will attack Iapetus at the earliest opportunity. Almost lost in the ever-present low cloud of Constanix II, vapor contrails cut across the midday sky. Korax watched them coming closer from the observatorium atop the main temple of Atlas, gazing skywards with Loriak beside him. Glimmers of engines rose up from the barge city to meet the approaching craft from Iapetus. From this vantage point, he could also see the grey-foamed seas stretching unbroken to the horizon, a low haze rising from the acidic waters. Massive anti-grav repellers and plasma drives kept the city aloft, and though the shields kept Atlas protected from the acid storms that occasionally surged across its path, they did nothing to ward away the chill of the air 500 meters above sea level. To Korax, the cold was of no consequence, but he was keenly aware of the discomfort it would be causing the unaugmented populace of the city. They were, for the most part, hard at work in munitions factories, manufacturing shells and energy packs for the Skitari and their war engines. Korax had gone to some lengths to make the people of Atlas feel as much a part of this endeavour as his warriors and the soldiers of the Mechanicum. The factory shift labourers had just as much to lose in the coming battle and had already suffered casualties in the struggle for possession of Atlas.
"Are you sure it is wise to allow them to approach so closely?" asked the tech priest.
"It is essential," replied Korax. He watched as the two squadrons converged on each other, the reconnaissance craft from the capital splitting apart as the 6 Primaris lightning interceptors broke into pairs to rise above them.
"I want Delvia to see Atlas and think that he faces only Mechanicum forces. The presence of my Raven Guard is best hidden behind false intelligence. Your pilots have been correctly briefed?"
"They will allow one of the enemy spycraft to evade destruction and return to Iapetus, as we discussed."
"Then I must do as the rest of my troops and make myself unseen."
Korax headed down the broad stairwell into the upper level of the temple, Loriak at his heel. In the barge city's control center, adepts manned the scanner arrays, seeking to pinpoint the capital's current location. It had taken nearly 3 days to cover more than 1,200 kilometers, but now the Primarch felt that his target was, relatively speaking, close at hand. The recon craft overhead had a range in hundreds of kilometers, but it seemed unlikely that Delvia would have retreated in the face of the approaching barge city. If anything, the tech priests predicted Iapetus was most likely on a closing course to bring retribution to Atlas. Moving at full speed, the two cities were likely to come within sight of each other sometime in the next 10 hours. It was unfortunate that the Camiel had to remain hidden from Iapetus's considerable sensors and defense cannons. An orbital scan would have located Iapetus with ease. As things stood, the captured strike cruiser had been forced to disengage into deeper space after dispatching its cargo of legionaries and strike craft to avoid detection by the Mechanicum's orbital stations and patrolling monitor craft. Those same orbital assets were no doubt fixed upon Atlas's current path, and Delvia would know exactly where his enemies were. It was for this reason that Korax had permitted the recon overflight. The enemy could learn little more than they already knew, and the opportunity to mislead the foe was to be seized, turning the disadvantage around. If Korax could not be somewhere other than where his enemy believed him to be, a good compromise was to feign lesser strength until the final moment. As he had laid down in the combat doctrine of his legion, if utter concealment was impossible, partial concealment was still preferable to none. The hunched Salvar Kaynar approached Korax and the Mago Kritark with a deferential nod of the head.
Radio stream analysis has detected a confluence of signals approximately 300 kilometers distant on bearing 080. The spycraft above are drone operated, and we are attempting to reveal trace the source of their control signals. This should allow us to triangulate with our other readings.
Prepare anti-air batteries to fire, Korax said, motioning Loriarch to the servitors and adepts manning the weapons matriculators. Our dropcraft are concealed as best we could manage, but let us not give the enemy the opportunity of too much time. Loriarch obeyed without comment. He seemed to have acquiesced to Korax's authority easily enough, but the Primarch knew it was out of necessity rather than any deeper loyalty. Korax unconsciously checked that the 5 Raven Guard legionaries stationed in the command chamber were alert, and was pleased to see the black armored warriors paying close attention to everything that passed. If given the chance, Loriarch might well decide to sacrifice the Raven Guard in an attempt to bargain for peace with Delvia. The Primarch was not willing to afford the Mago Kritarch that chance. A distant hum set the temple vibrating slightly as power channels were opened and Atlas's weapons systems came online. It was likely that only Korax noticed the change, registering not only the minuscule trembling, but also the subtle alteration in the electromagnetic field that sheathed the barge city. Any target more than a kilometer distant was beyond the energy shield, so targeting the recon jets required very careful calibration between the gun batteries and the field's internal frequency.
Ready to fire, Lord Primarch, Loriarch informed him.
Open fire,
Korax replied with a nod. The energy field stuttered for a few microseconds, enough time for the lasers of the anti-aircraft turrets to loose a salvo of shots towards the enemy craft circling overhead.
No hits, reported one of the adepts. Enemy craft withdrawing from immediate airspace,
another confirmed from the sensor banks.
Lightning flight leaders requesting authorization for pursuit, a third adept announced.
20 kilometers, no more, Korax ordered. Clear Atlas's airspace, and then they are to return to maintain air patrol cover.
Yes, Lord Primarch.
Korax watched patiently as glowing runes slid across the strategic displays while the interceptors hounded the enemy recon craft away to the southeast. He noted that the direction the fleeing spycraft took was towards the radio anomaly detected earlier. Iapetus was almost directly in Atlas's path.
Mago Kritarch, we convene pre-battle council in 1 hour. All forces are to be on utmost readiness. Our enemy is close. Send word to all stations, squadrons, and company leaders. Make battle preparations.
Receiving an affirmative from Loriarch, Korax quit the command level and made his way down the central stairwells of the temple. It was too undignified for him to crouch inside the conveyor cages that transported the smaller tech priests from story to story.
Agapito, he called over the voxnet, meet me at the main temple gatehouse. I have plans we need to discuss.
Yes, Lord Korax, came the commander's reply. I am overseeing the assembly of the first assault column. I will be at the temple in 7 minutes with your leave.
Very well. Attend to immediate concerns first, Commander. I will come to you.
Korax ignored the stares from the multitude of tech priests as he made his way down to ground level. The Primarch was alert at every moment, conscious that any one of the Mechanicum cultists might have been swayed to the cause of Delvia. He did not fear attack. Not even together would the gathered machine men be a match for him, but he watched for any sign of treachery. If Delvia and his allies were to receive warning that they faced a Primarch, Korax's entire strategy would be put in jeopardy. Gauging the emotions of the tech priests was not as easy as with normal men. Many had their faces concealed behind masks, or their features were heavily modified with bionics and augmetics. Some were incapable of emotion at all, their consciousness transferred to inorganic cogitators that made them creatures of pure logic. It was these matriculati that worried Korax the most. Fear of reprisal would keep most of the tech priests in check, but if circumstances changed enough that the logical course of action would be to turn on the Raven Guard, there were those amongst the Cult of Atlas who would do so in a nanosecond. It was the Primarch's intention to ensure that his course of action would prove superior, eliminating the possibility of betrayal. It was with such thoughts, his expression guarded, that Korax exited the main temple building into the compound. Glancing up, he saw the vapor trails of the dogfight were quickly dissipating in the high winds. "I've shown you what you wanted to see," he whispered to himself. "Now, come and get us." The clatter of rivet drivers, the whine of ceramite bonders, and the hiss of spark welders rang loudly throughout the hangar-like arming house of the 4th District. Overseen by red-robed tech adepts, gangs of workers swarmed across three lines of tracked tanks, assault guns and personnel carriers, affixing additional armor plating to the fronts of the vehicles. Agapito walked between the lines of armored carriers and turreted behemoths, casting his eye over the work being done. Everything was proceeding in a timely and orderly fashion. The work teams labored with quiet determination, while crew captains and squad leaders inspected the modifications being made to their vehicles with keen interest. They would be the men and women pushing head-on into the enemy defense, and their lives were being staked upon the improvised upgrades. Behind the columns of armored vehicles were lined batteries of field guns and self-propelled artillery pieces. Laser-based cannons, rotary guns, and shell firers sat alongside more esoteric lightning throwers and fusion beams, sonic destructors, and conversion beamers. Many of the designs were familiar to the Raven Guard commander, but in all the years he had fought for the Legion, he had never trusted the more outlandish Mechanicum weapons. They could be devastating when functioning, but the required maintenance and constant tech priest attention made them impractical within the Primarch's code of self-sufficiency and flexibility. He much preferred a trained legionary with a missile launcher to any of the bizarre war engines on display. Sergeant Kaldur announced that Korax had arrived at the armory complex, and Agapito left the main workshop to meet his Primarch in one of the overseer galleries above the manufactory floor. He met Korax at the foot of the stairwell and was waved to precede the Primarch to the upper level.
"Everything is progressing?" asked the Primarch, speaking over the comnet.
Korax had emphasized the need to maintain strict communication security on Atlas, and the command channel was the most secure Vox transmission available. The ciphers were changed every hour, and keyed to the individual transponders located in every Raven Guard's armor. It would be all but impossible for any of the Mechanicum to listen in.
"Two more hours, and everything will be in accordance with your orders, Lord Korax."
Agapito kept his reply formal, uncertain why the Primarch had chosen to visit him. The commander wondered if he was under scrutiny for his recent actions and wanted to show a disciplined, trustworthy appearance.
"What do you make of our allies' resources?"
The two of them reached the upper landing, and Agapito led Korax out onto a meshwork balcony overlooking the arming bay.
"Do you think they will serve our purposes?"
"Well armed, and with the upgrades to the frontal armor, they'll be able to take a lot of damage going into the enemy, Lord," Agapito replied. "Slow, though. Even slower than normal, with the extra weight. This won't be any lightning assault."
"No,"
Korax said quietly. The Primarch paused for a moment, obviously in thought.
"Too slow, perhaps. I have re-evaluated the battle plan and made some adjustments. I wanted to brief you first. I will inform the Mago Kritarch and the others when the time is appropriate."
"What changes, Lord Korax?" "I have mustered 4 attack columns across the proud districts of Atlas in preparation for a 3-pronged assault and a moving reserve, as you requested. It'll take some time to relocate them."
"The Mechanicum forces will deploy as planned. There is no need for a reorganization at this stage. It is our warriors whose role I have changed."
"You do not wish for us to act as mobile support for the assault columns? Atlas cannot match Iapetus's defenders on a 1-for-1 basis. We need to maintain the Raven Guard as a mobile element to create breakthrough points."
"We do, which is why I have a new role for you and the legionaries, Agapito."
Korax laid a reassuring hand on the commander's shoulder and looked down at the assembled war engines.
"I plan to take Iapetus the same way we took Atlas. We'll draw out Delvia's forces and then make a decapitation strike on the main temple."
"You're never going after Delvia and Avrakin alone."
Agapito would never second-guess his Primarch's decisions, nor underestimate his prowess in battle, but a single-handed attack seemed suicidal.
I'll take two squads with me in Shadowhawks. Atlas's army is simply too slow to achieve the victory we need.
The Primarch folded his arms and stared out across the arming area, though his gaze seemed far more distant, as though he was looking away to his target.
If Delvia senses he is losing, there is every chance he will attempt to escape. If he does so, he will relocate to another barge city or perhaps even leave Constanix altogether. The knowledge he has gained from the Wordbearers cannot be allowed to leave this planet. We need to seize control of the temple complex and contain the traitors as quickly as possible, preferably before Delvia realizes he is in danger of losing the war.
So how will the Talons fight, Lord Korax? Agapito had recovered some of his composure, acknowledging the reasoning of his Primarch.
There are likely to be Wordbearers protecting the capital alongside the Mechanicum soldiers, and we have no idea how many of Lorgar's scum have come here. There cannot be many Wordbearers, said Korax. It would appear that Camille is the only contact they have made with Constanix, and even at full complement, she would carry no more than 500 legionaries. From the account of the Navigator, the Wordbearers were pulled together from several formations on Kalth, survivors banding together under Nathrakin. Also, if Nathrakin had a more numerous contingent, then it would be in his interests to spread them throughout all of the barge cities to establish wider control, rather than concentrate his force in one place. A follower of Lorgar would not hesitate to spread influence and proselytize their creed if given the opportunity. No, I must conclude that the Wordbearers do not outnumber us here. Quite the opposite, in fact.
But we cannot ignore them as a military threat, Lord, said Agapito. With those same numbers, we were able to take control of Atlas. If we fight them head-on, we simply negate the advantage of our presence.
That is exactly why we will not engage the Wordbearers directly, but leave them to the greater numbers of the Skitarii. We must concentrate our effort and strength on achieving the central objective, the Temple and Delvia.
I cannot order the Talons to ignore the Wordbearers, Lord, protested Agapito, though the argument was more from his own feeling than for his legionaries.
Our warriors have scores to settle. The legionaries will do as they are ordered, growled the Primarch, turning his black stare on Agapito, making it clear that he included Agapito in that remark.
The commander flinched, as if he'd been struck.
We have spent many years fighting alongside each other, Agapito, but do not test our friendship any further. I am your Primarch and Legion Commander, and you will not disobey me. The Talons take their lead from you. You will set the right example.
Yes, Lord Korax. Agapito cast his gaze downwards, shamed by Korax's words.
It will be as you say. Good.
The Primarch's anger vanished as swiftly as it had appeared.
Delvir and Nethrakin will be expecting an attack from the Tech Guard. In fact, I believe they will seek to attack first, forcing Atlas onto the defensive. We cannot allow that to happen. To ensure that surprise is maximized, the Raven Guard will form the first attack wave. Every Shadowhawk, Whisper Cutter, and other craft you can muster will carry a single assault force into the heart of the enemy city. Your Talons must be like a lodestone, dragging the enemy into battle, forcing them to abandon their perimeter to contest against an attack from inside their lines.
Hard fighting, said Agapito.
The best place for us. I take it that there can be no possibility of extraction. Only if annihilation is the alternative. This is not a terminus mission. Commander, I expect you to win through with as few casualties as possible. Maneuver, attack, and speed.
Attack, withdraw, attack again, Agapito said with a nod.
This is not my first battle, Lord Korax.
The Primarch smiled and shook his head.
Of course not. The longer you can remain fighting, the more forces will be drawn to you, and the further Loriak's army can create an axis of attack for my assault. The temple is located in the starboard quadrant of the city. I will calculate the best routes and angles of attack to turn the enemy's attention to the port districts, and then I will swoop and claim the prize.
I understand, Lord, said Agapito. He banged a fist to his chest and bowed his head.
You can rely on the Talons. Do not allow yourself to be surrounded, Commander, Korax said with a grim expression. There will be no reserves to break through to your position. Engage the enemy and lure them away from the temple. That is your only concern.
Agapito nodded again, unsure if the Primarch's insistence was a sign of doubt or simply the wish to make certain that he was understood. There was no further assurance the commander could offer to his lord. If decades of valiant and dedicated service were not enough to convince Korax of his intent, words would not help. Korax nodded a farewell and departed, leaving Agapito with mixed thoughts. The commander knew that if the Primarch had serious doubts, then he would have had no hesitation in replacing Agapito as commander. Cadaril and others were quite prepared for the role. On the other hand, Agapito did not know if he could trust himself. The Primarch had explicitly ordered that the Talons should not go after the Wordbearers, but if the Wordbearers came for them, then he might not shun the opportunity to exact a little revenge. The smog, rising from Iapetus's scores of chimneys and furnaces, fouled the horizon, though the capital city itself was still out of sight. Atlas closed steadily on the dark smear, cruising 500 meters above the sea. In the skies over both cities, clouds of aircraft circled like carrion birds, sighting a carcass. The last peals of the warning sirens echoed along the empty streets of Atlas, sending stragglers dashing for the basements and bunkers cut into the bedrock of the city. Beneath the constant groan of massive anti-grav engines came the rumbling of vehicle motors and the thud of booted feet, accompanied by the whine of bionically augmented warriors. Columns of Skitari gathered half a kilometer from the prow keys. Crews made final checks of their vehicles. Squad leaders called out the last muster rolls. Inside the control chamber, Korax monitored the relative position of the two barge cities, a little less than 50 kilometers apart. 2.5 hours if Atlas continued at his current speed. Iapetus had hove to, remaining in place as Delvia waited for the insurrectionists to make their move.
Extend fighter screen to 30 kilometers, the Primarch ordered. No recon overflights this time.
A Lex mechanic relayed the command in a dull monotone, and a servitor burbled a burst of the tech priest's argo. The lingua technis, as a meaningless stream of piercing syllables and husky grunts. While the Primarch waited patiently, Loriarch paced back and forth behind him, hands lost in the sleeves of his robes as he clasped them at his waist, his strides short with agitation. Korax did not allow the Mago-Critarch's behavior to distract him. Each man dealt with a nervous lull before battle in his own way, and to force Loriarch to cease his perambulations would only serve to perturb the tech priest further. Arms folded across his chest, Korax stared at the display screens and scanner panels, alert for any sign that would warn of Delvia's intent. It was likely that the Archmagos was no veteran of war, but with a word-bearer to guide him, he was not to be underestimated. If there was one lesson that the Primarch had taken from Istvan V, it was never to expect victory as a right. And even as he cast a glance across flickering displays, he gauged the mood of the overseeing tech priests. For the moment, they seemed calm enough, given the circumstances. But the coming battle afforded no room for hesitation or error. Korax's way of war was finely tuned, the timings perfect, the maneuvers precise. Though underlined with brutal simplicity, an encircling attack designed to separate the bulk of the enemy from Iapetus's main temple, the assault plans of the Raven Guard and Skitari were an intricately choreographed process devised through many hours of study of Iapetus's layout and what was known or could be supposed concerning the forces under Delvia's command.
I searched your archives for precedents of this battle, Korax said conversationally, attempting to engage Loriarch and distract the tech priest from whatever doom-laden scenarios he was considering. Even so, the Primarch's gaze did not stray from the monitor banks. There was civil war on Constanix during the Long Night, but few details survive.
It is true.
Loriac's artificially modulated voice had only one volume and tempo, making it impossible to gauge his mood.
1268 years have passed since the years of peril, and much that was known was destroyed in the war. The Magi, loyal to the purity of the Machine God's creed, prevailed, but at great cost. Data was lost that will never be recovered. A great setback to our cause.
You have studied the old recordings and logs.
I have spent much of my life with them, Lord Primarch, said Loriarch.
It was impossible to know for sure, but it seemed that there was chastisement in the Magos's posture and sharp gestures. Perhaps resentment that Korax would think Loriarch ignorant of his world's history.
I am familiar with the accounts of intercity battle. It seems destructive and wasteful of resources. The arrangement of the cognoscenti is a far superior form of conflict resolution.
I agree.
Yet you are a warrior and a general, Lord Primarch. It is your nature to wage war.
Korax paused before replying, telling himself that no insult was intended by the tech priest, only observation. He chose his words carefully, trying to summarize a lifetime's philosophy in a few sentences.
War is a necessity to bring peace. Some of my brothers are war makers, pure and simple, but I am not. Some, like Rogal Dorn, are architects, both of fortresses and of worlds. Gilliman's empire stands testament to his abilities as statesman as well as war leader. The Emperor created us as perfect warriors and commanders, but the Primarchs are far greater than simple warlords.
And what do you build, Lord Primarch?
Loriak's dark eyes fixed Korax with a long stare.
If Horus had not turned, what would your legacy have been, if not a trail of conquered worlds, a multitude of widowed and orphaned people?
I build hope in the hearts of men and women. I show them that from the long night we can emerge into enlightenment. I never persecuted those I conquered, and I never refused a surrender sincerely offered. I have shed the blood of the guilty and the innocent, laid waste to civilizations for the cause of the Emperor, but I never brought ruin needlessly. Each death was laid as a sacrifice to a better future, a life free from suppression and tyranny.
Would not a tyrant claim the same? No man believes himself to do wrong.
No tyrant would be willing to give up his power once all enemies were thwarted. I was prepared for just such an eventuality.
I speak not of you, but the Emperor. What makes his vision of the galaxy any purer than that of Horus, or yours, or the Mechanicum's? You may have been the weapon the Emperor used against a galaxy of foes, but it was his power that wielded you, unleashed your legion against those that opposed him.
Again, Korax was forced to think for a moment, to formulate his reply so that a knot of instinct and simple knowing could be unraveled into something more reasoned.
The Emperor is all the things he wishes to be. He has been both tyrannical and compassionate, merciless and merciful. But I have seen into him, and I have touched minds with him in a way no other can. And at the core of what others see is a man of humility and wisdom and learning. He is a man driven by the rational. A tyrant craves domination, but the Emperor carries his power like a burden. The responsibility for all of humanity is on his shoulders. He is everything he must be, not out of desire, but from duty and necessity.
Loriarch said nothing, and it was impossible to know whether he believed Korax or not. Talk of the Emperor always left Korax feeling grateful and humbled. Grateful for the Gene Father that had created him, humbled by the power of the ruler who had guided him. The rebellion of the War Master and the Primarchs who had sided with him made all the more clear the temptations and perils that came with near unlimited power. Hunger for glory, desire for personal ambition, resentment and hatred had all taken their toll upon the mightiest creations of the Emperor. What effort of will did it take for the Emperor not to succumb to the same? What inhuman mind could spend millennia seeing the galaxy fall to ruin and yet never once abandon the vision of a greater future? Korax had been sorely tested from the moment he had awoken in the ice caves of Lycaeus to this very second. But never could he come close to knowing the decisions that weighed so heavily upon his imperial master. Wrapped up with these thoughts, he regarded the monitors with some regret. More would die today, soldier and civilian alike. He could not count the numbers dead by his actions over a long lifetime of bloodshed. Billions, surely. Yet, just as the Emperor carried the burden of his responsibility without complaint, so too would Korax. And if ever true peace was to come, then he would look back on his bloody life without regret, knowing that the cause had always been just. Agapito tapped out a quick beat on the plate of his leg armor as he waited in the confines of the Shadowhawk. He made himself stop, conscious that it might be seen as a sign of nervousness, and was probably irritating to the other Raven Guard, though none would ever voice complaint. 2 hours from Iapetus. 2 hours that would crawl past, his thoughts alive with possibilities, his death and the death of his companions, victory or defeat, vengeance or failure. He tried to move his thoughts elsewhere, to rites of battle and the layout of the target city. He mentally recited Korax's doctrines, but they were no longer the calming mantra they had once been. 2 hours, not of fear, but anticipation. He tapped his fingers, not as a response to dread, but in excitement. 2 hours until another battle. 2 hours until the righteousness would claim him again, and he could drown out the haunting cries of his dead brothers with the din of war. Without conscious thought, his fingers started to tap again.